Time is 9:01 p.m. You're listening to KVMR FM, Nevada City. My name is T.E. Wolf, and this is A Word in Edgewise. On tonight's program, three short stories by Ray Bradbury. Three variations on a theme. See if you can get it. The Highway. The cool afternoon rain had come over the valley, touching the corn in the tilled mountain fields, tapping on the dry grass roof of the hut. In the rainy darkness, the woman ground corn between cakes of lava rock, working steadily. In the wet lightlessness, somewhere, a baby cried. Hernando stood waiting for the rain to cease so he might take the wooden plow into the field again. Below, the river boiled brown and thickened in its course. The concrete highway, another river, did not flow at all. It lay shining, empty. A car had not come along it in an hour. This was in itself of unusual interest. Over the years, there had not been an hour when a car had not pulled up. Someone shouting, "Hey there, can we take your picture?" Someone with a box that clicked and a coin in his hand. If he walked slowly across the field without his hat, sometimes they called, "Oh, we want you with your hat on." And they waved their hands, rich with gold things that told time, or identified them, or did nothing at all but wink like spiders' eyes in the sun. So he would turn and go back to get his hat. His wife spoke. "Something is wrong, Hernando?"
"Si."
"The road. Something big has happened. Something big to make the road so empty this way." He walked from the hut, slowly and easily, the rain washing over the twined shoes of grass and thick tire rubber he wore. He remembered very well the incident of this pair of shoes. The tire had come into the hut with violence one night, exploding the chickens and the pots apart. It had come alone, rolling swiftly. The car, off which it had come, had rushed on as far as the curve, and hung a moment, headlights reflected, before plunging into the river. The car was still there. One might see it on a good day when the river ran slow and the mud cleared. Deep under, its metal shining, long and low and very rich, lay the car. But then the mud came in again and you saw nothing. The following day, he had carved the shoe soles from the tire rubber. He reached the highway now and stood upon it, listening to the small sounds it made in the rain. Then, suddenly, as if at a signal, the cars came. Hundreds of them, miles of them, rushing and rushing as he stood by and by him. Big, long, black cars heading north toward the United States, roaring, taking the curves at too great a speed, with a ceaseless blowing and honking. And there was something about the faces of the people packed into the cars, something which dropped him into a deep silence. He stood back to let the cars roar on. Counted them until he tired. 500, 1,000 cars passed, and there was something in the faces of all of them. But they moved too swiftly for him to tell what this thing was. Finally, the silence and emptiness returned. The swift, long, low convertible cars were gone. He heard the last horn fading away. The road was empty again. It had been like a funeral cortege, but a wild one, racing, hair out, screaming to some ceremony ever northward. Why? He could only shake his head and rub his fingers softly at his sides. Now, all alone, a final car. There was something very, very final about it. Down the mountain road in the thin, cool rain, fuming up great clouds of steam, came an old Ford. It was traveling as swiftly as it might. He expected it to break apart at any instant. When this ancient Ford saw Hernando, it pulled up, caked with mud and rusted, the radiator bubbling angrily. May we have some water, please, senor? A young man, perhaps 21, was driving. He wore a yellow sweater, an open-collared white shirt, and gray pants. In the topless car, the rain fell upon him and 5 young women, packed so they could not move in the interior. They were all very pretty, and they were keeping the rain from themselves and the driver with old newspapers. But the rain got through to them, soaking their bright dresses, soaking the young man. His hair was plastered with rain. But they did not seem to care about that. None complained, and this was unusual. Always before, they complained of rain, of heat, of time, of cold, of distance. Hernando nodded. I'll bring you the water. Oh, please hurry, cried one of the girls. She sounded very high and afraid. There was no impatience in her, only an asking out of fear. For the first time, Hernando ran when a tourist asked. Always before, he had walked slower at such requests. He returned with a hub lid full of water. This, too, had been a gift from the highway. One afternoon, it had sailed like a flung coin into his field, round and glittering. The car to which it belonged had slid on, oblivious to the fact that it had lost a silver eye. Until now, he and his wife had used it for washing and cooking. It made a fine bowl. As he poured the water into the boiling radiator, Hernando looked up at their stricken faces. Thank you, said one of the girls. You don't know what this means. Hernando smiled. So much traffic in this hour. It all goes one way. North. He did not mean to say anything to hurt them, but when he looked up again, there all of them sat in the rain, and they were crying. The young man was trying to stop them by laying his hand on their shoulders, shaking them very gently. But they held their papers over their heads and their mouths covered, and their eyes were shut and their faces changed color, and they cried, some aloud, some soft. Hernando stood with the half-empty lid in his fingers. I did not mean to say anything, senor, he apologized. That's all right, said the driver. What is wrong, senor? Haven't you heard? Replied the young man, turning, holding tightly to the wheel with one hand, leaning forward. It's happened. This was bad. The others, at this, cried still harder, holding on to each other, forgetting the newspapers, letting the rain fall and mingle with their tears. Hernando stiffened. He put the rest of the water into the radiator. He looked at the sky, which was black with storm. He looked at the river rushing. He felt the asphalt under his shoes. He came to the side of the car. The young man took his hand and gave him a peso. No, Hernando said, giving it back. It is my pleasure. Thank you. You're so kind, said one of the girls, still sobbing. Mama, Papa, oh, I want to be home. I want to be home. Oh, Mama. And the others held her. I did not hear, senor, said Hernando quietly. The war, shouted the young man, as if no one could hear. It's come, the Atom War, the end of the world. The world? Said Hernando, glancing around him. Thank you. Thank you for your help. Goodbye, said the young man. Goodbye, they all said in the rain, not seeing him. He stood while the car engaged its gears and rattled off down, fading away through the valley. Finally, it was gone, with the young women in it. The last car, the newspapers held and fluttered over their heads. Hernando did not move for a long time. The rain ran very cold down his cheeks and along his fingers and into the woven garment on his legs. He held his breath, waiting, tight and tensed. He watched the highway, but it did not move again. He doubted that it would move much for a very long time. The rain stopped. The sky broke through the clouds. In 10 minutes, the storm was gone, like a bad dream. A sweet wind blew the smell of the jungle up to him. He could hear the river moving gently and easily on its way. The jungle was very green. Everything was fresh. He walked down through the field to his house and picked up his plow. With his hands on it, he looked at the sky beginning to burn hot with the sun. His wife called out from her work. What happened, Hernando? It is nothing, he replied. He set the plow in the furrow. He called sharply to his burro. Burro! And they walked together through the rich field, under the clearing sky, on their tilled land by the deep river. What do they mean, he said. The world. Thank you.
Where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain you're gonna fall. Oh, what did you see, my blue-eyed son? And what did you see, my darling young one? I saw a newborn baby with wild wolves all around it. I saw a highway of diamonds with nobody on it. I saw a black branch with blood that kept dripping. A room full of men with their hammers a-bleeding. I saw a white ladder all covered with water. I saw 10,000 talkers whose tongues were all broken. I saw guns and sharp swords in the hands of young children. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard. And it's a hard rain you're gonna fall. Oh, what did you hear, my blue-eyed son? And what did you hear, my darling young one? Heard the sound of a thunder that roared out a warning. I heard the roar of a wave that could drown the whole world. I heard 100 drummers whose hands were ablazing. I heard 10,000 whispering and nobody listening. I heard one person starve, I heard many people laughing. I heard the song of a poet who died in the gutter. I heard the sound of a clown who cried in the alley. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain are gonna fall. Oh, what did you meet, my blue-eyed son? And who did you meet, my darling young one? I met a young child beside a dead pony. I met a white man who walked a black dog. I met a young woman whose body was burning. I met a young girl, she gave me a rainbow. I met one man who was wounded in love. I met another man who was wounded in hatred. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rains are gonna fall.
August 2026. there will come soft rains.
Tick-tock, 7 o'clock, time to get up, time to get up, 7 o'clock.
In the living room, the voice clock sang out as if it were afraid that nobody would get up. The morning house lay empty. The clock ticked on, repeating and repeating its sounds into the emptiness.
7, 9, breakfast time. 7, 9.
In the kitchen, the breakfast stove gave a hissing sigh and ejected from its warm interior 8 pieces of perfectly browned toast, 8 eggs sunny side up, 16 slices of bacon, 2 coffees, and 2 cool glasses of milk. Another voice came from the kitchen ceiling.
Today is August 4, 2026, in the city of Allendale, California.
It repeated the date 3 times for memory's sake.
Today is Mr. Featherstone's birthday. Today is the anniversary of Talita's marriage. Insurance is payable, as are the water, gas, and electric bills.
Somewhere in the walls, relays clicked. Memory tapes glided under electric eyes.
8:01, tick-tock, 8:01 o'clock. Off to school, off to work, run, run, 8:01.
But no doors slammed, no carpets took the soft tread of rubber heels. It was raining outside. The weather box on the front door sang quietly.
Rain, rain, go away. Rubbers, raincoats for today.
And the rain tapped on the empty house, echoing. Outside, the garage chimed and lifted its door to reveal the waiting car. After a long wait, the door swung down again. At 8:30, the eggs were shriveled and the toast was like stone. An aluminum wedge scraped them into the sink, where hot water whirled them down a metal throat, which digested and flushed them away to the distant sea. The dirty dishes were dropped into a hot washer and emerged, twinkling dry.
9:15, time to clean.
Out of warrens in the wall, tiny robot mice darted. The rooms were a crawl with the small cleaning animals, all rubber and metal. They thudded against chairs, whirling their mustached runners, kneading the rug nap, sucking gently at hidden dust. Then, like mysterious invaders, they popped into their burrows. Their pink electric eyes faded. The house was clean.
10 o'clock.
The sun came out from behind the rain. The house stood alone in a city of rubble and ashes. This was the one house left standing. At night, the ruined city gave off a radioactive glow which could be seen for miles.
10:15.
The garden sprinklers whirled up in golden founts, filling the soft morning air with scatterings of brightness. The water pelted window panes, running down the charred west side where the house had been burned evenly, free of its white paint. The entire west face of the house was black, save for 5 places. Here the silhouette in paint of a man mowing a lawn. Here, as in a photograph, a woman bent to pick flowers. Still farther over, their images burned on wood in one titanic instant. A small boy, hands flung into the air. Higher up, the image of a thrown ball, and opposite him, a girl, hands raised to catch a ball which never came down. The five spots of paint. The man, the woman, the children, the ball, remained. The rest was a thin, charcoaled layer. The gentle sprinkler rain filled the garden with falling light. Until this day, how well the house had kept its peace. How carefully it had inquired.
Who goes there? What's the password?
And getting no answer from lonely foxes and whining cats. It had shut up its windows and drawn shades in an old maidenly preoccupation with self-protection, which bordered on mechanical paranoia. It quivered at each sound, the house did. If a sparrow brushed a window, the shade snapped up. The bird, startled, flew off. No, not even a bird must touch the house. The house was an altar with 10,000 attendants. Big, small, servicing, attending, inquires. But the gods had gone away, and the ritual of the religion continued senselessly, uselessly.
12. Noon.
A dog whined, shivering, on the front porch. The front door recognized the dog voice and opened. The dog, once huge and fleshy but now gone to bone and covered with sores, moved in and through the house, tracking mud. Behind it whirred angry mice, angry at having to pick up mud, angry at inconvenience. For not a leaf fragment blew under the door, but with the wall panels flipped open, and the copper scrap rats flashed swiftly out. The offending dust, hair, or paper seized in miniature steel jaws was raced back to the burrows. And there, down tubes which fed into the cellar. It was dropped into the sighing vent of an incinerator, which sat like evil Baal in a dark corner. The dog ran upstairs, hysterically yelping at each door, at last realizing, as the house realized, that only silence was here. It sniffed the air and scratched the kitchen door. Behind the door, the stove was making pancakes, which filled the house with a rich baked odor and the scent of maple syrup. The dog frothed at the mouth, lying at the door, sniffing, its eyes turned to fire. It ran wildly in circles, biting at its tail, spun in a frenzy, and died. It lay in the parlor for an hour.
2 o'clock. 2 o'clock.
Delicately sensing decay at last, the regiments of mice hummed out as softly as blown gray leaves in an electrical wind.
Two fifteen.
The dog was gone. The dog was gone. In the cellar, the incinerator glowed suddenly, and a whirl of sparks leaped up the chimney.
2:35.
Bridge tables sprouted from patio walls. Playing cards fluttered onto pads in a shower of pips. Martinis manifested on an oaken bench with egg salad sandwiches. Music played. But the tables were silent, and the cards untouched. At 4 o'clock, the tables folded like great butterflies back through the paneled walls. The nursery walls glowed. Animals took shape. Yellow giraffes, blue lions, pink antelopes, lilac panthers cavorting in crystal substance. The walls were glass. They looked out upon color and fantasy. Hidden films clocked through well-oiled sprockets, and the walls lived. The nursery floor was woven to resemble a crisp cereal meadow. Over this ran aluminum roaches and iron crickets, and in the hot, still air, butterflies of delicate red tissue wavered among the sharp aroma of animal spores. There was a sound like a great matted yellow hive of bees within a dark bellows, the lazy bumble of a purring lion. And there was the patter of okapi feet and the murmur of a fresh jungle rain, like other hoofs, falling upon the summer-starched grass. Now the walls dissolved into distances of parched weed, mile on mile, and warm, endless sky. The animals drew away into thorn breaks and water holes. It was the children's hour.
O'clock.
The bath filled with clear hot water.
6 o'clock. 7 o'clock. 8 o'clock.
The dinner dishes manipulated like magic tricks, and in the study, a click. In the metal stand opposite the hearth, where a fire now blazed up warmly, a cigar popped out. Half an inch of soft gray ash already on it, smoking, waiting.
9 o'clock.
The beds warmed their hidden circuits, for nights were cool here.
9:05.
A voice spoke from the study ceiling.
Mrs. McClellan, which poem would you like this evening?
The house was silent.
Since you express no preference, I shall select a poem at random. Sarah Teasdale, as I recall, your favorite.
There There will come soft rains and the smell of the ground, and swallows circling in their shimmering sound, and frogs in their pools singing at night, and wild plum trees in tremulous white. Robins will wear their feathery fire, whistling their whims on a low fence wire. And not one will know of the war, not one, will care at last when it is done. Not one would mind, neither bird nor tree, if mankind perished utterly. And spring herself, when she woke at dawn, would scarcely know that we were gone.
Fire burned on the stone hearth, and the cigar fell away into a mound of quiet ash on its tray. The empty chairs faced each other between the silent walls, and the music played. At 10 o'clock, the house began to die. The wind blew. A falling tree branch crashed through the kitchen window. Cleaning solvent, bottled, shattered over the stove. The room was ablaze in an instant.
Fire!
Fire! Fire!
Fire!
The house lights flashed. Water pumps shot water from the ceilings. But the solvent spread on the linoleum, licking, eating under the kitchen door, while the voices took it up in chorus.
Fire!
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 Fire! Fire!
The house tried to save itself. Doors sprang tightly shut, but the windows were broken by the heat, and the wind blew and sucked upon the fire. The house gave ground as the fire and 10 billion angry sparks moved with flaming ease from room to room, and then up the stairs, while scurrying water rats squeaked from the walls, pistoled their water, and ran for more. And the wall sprays let down showers of mechanical rain. But too late. Somewhere, sighing, a pump shrugged to a stop. The quenching rain ceased. The reserve water, supply, which had filled baths and washed dishes for so many quiet days, was gone. The fire crackled up the stairs. It fed upon Picassos and Matisses in the upper halls like delicacies, baking off the oily flesh, tenderly crisping the canvases into black shavings. And now the fire lay in beds, stood in windows, changed the colors of shapes. And then, reinforcements. From attic trapdoors, blind robot faces peered down with faucet mouths gushing green chemical. The fire backed off, as even an elephant must at the sight of a dead snake. Now there were 20 snakes whipping over the floor, killing the fire with the clear, cold venom of green froth. But the fire was clever. It had sent flames outside the house, up through the attic, to the pumps there. An explosion. The attic brain which directed the pumps was shattered into bronze shrapnel on the beams. The fire rushed back into every closet and felt of the clothes hung there. The house shuddered, oak bone on bone, its bared skeleton cringing from the heat, its wire, its nerves revealed as if a surgeon had torn the skin off to let the red veins and capillaries quiver in the scalded air.
Help! 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 Help!
Fire!
Run.
Help!
Fire!
Run!
Fire!
Run!
Fire!
Help!
Run!
Fire!
Run!
Fire!
Run!
Fire!
Run!
Help!
Run.
Help.
Heat snapped mirrors like the brittle winter ice, and the voices wailed, like a tragic nursery rhyme. A dozen voices, high, low, like children dying in a forest, alone, alone. And the voices fading as the wires popped their sheathings like hot chestnuts. One, two, three, four voices died. In the nursery, the jungle burned. Blue lions roared. Purple giraffes bounded off. The panthers ran in circles, changing colors. And 10 million animals running before the fire vanished off toward a distant streaming river. Ten more voices died. In the last instant, under the fire avalanche, other choruses, oblivious, could be heard, announcing the time, playing music, cutting the lawn by remote control mower, or setting an umbrella frantically out and in the slamming and opening front door. A thousand things happening, like a clock shop, when each clock strikes the hour insanely before or after the other. A scene of maniac confusion, yet unity, singing, screaming. A few last cleaning mice darting bravely out to carry the horrid ashes away. And one voice, a sublime disregard for the situation, read poetry aloud in the fiery study, until all the film spools burned, until all the wires withered and the circuits cracked. The fire burst the house and let it slam flat down, puffing out skirts of spark and smoke. In the kitchen, an instant before the rain of fire and timber, the stove could be seen making breakfasts at a psychopathic rate. 10 dozen eggs, 6 loaves of toast, 20 dozen bacon strips, which, eaten by fire, started the stove working again, hysterically hissing. And then the crash. The attic smashing into kitchen and parlor. The parlor into cellar. Cellar into sub-cellar. Deep freeze, armchair, film tapes, circuits, beds, and all, like skeletons thrown in a cluttered mound, deep under. Followed by smoke and silence. A great quantity of smoke. Dawn showed faintly in the east. Among the ruins, only one wall stood alone. Within the wall, a last voice spoke, repeating itself over and over, again and again, even as the sun rose to shine upon the heaped rubble and steam.
Today is August 5, 2026. 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 Today is August 5, 2026.
And what'll you do now, my blue-eyed son? what'll you do now, my darling young one? I'm a-going back out for the rain starts a-falling. I'll walk to the depths of the deepest dark forest, where the people are many and their hands are all empty, where the pellets of poison are flooding their waters, where the home in the valley meets the damp, dirty prison, and the executioner's face is always well hidden, where hunger is ugly, where the souls are forgotten, where black is the color, where none is the number. And I'll tell it and speak it and think it and breathe it, and reflect from the mountains so all souls can see it. And I'll stand on the ocean until I start sinking, but I'll know my song well before I start singing. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, and it's a hard, it's a hard rains are gonna fall.
The last night of the world. What would you do if you knew that this was the last night of the world?
What would I do? You mean seriously?
Yes, seriously.
I don't know. I hadn't thought.
He poured some coffee. In the background, the two girls were playing blocks on the parlor rug in the light of the green hurricane lamps. There was an easy, clean aroma of the brewed coffee in the evening air. Well, you better start thinking about it.
You don't mean it.
He nodded.
A war?
He shook his head.
Not the hydrogen or the atom bomb?
No.
Or germ warfare?
None of those at all, he said, stirring his coffee slowly. Just, let's say, the closing of a book.
I don't think I understand.
No, nor do I, really. It's just a feeling. Sometimes it frightens me. Sometimes I'm not frightened at all, but at peace with it. He glanced in at the girls and their yellow hair shining in the lamplight. I didn't say anything to you. It first happened about 4 nights ago.
What?
A dream I had. I dreamed that it was all going to be over. A voice said it was. Not any kind of voice I can remember, but a voice anyway. And it said that things would stop here on Earth. I didn't think too much about it the next day. But then I went to the office and I caught Stan Willis looking out the window in the middle of the afternoon. And I said, "Penny for your thoughts, Stan." And he said, "I had a dream last night." Before he even told me the dream, I knew what it was. I could have told him, but he told me, and I listened to him.
It was the same dream.
The same. I told Stan I had dreamed it too. He didn't seem surprised. Relaxed, in fact. Then we just started walking through the office for the hell of it. It wasn't planned. We didn't say, "Hey, let's walk around." We just walked on our own. And everywhere we saw people looking at their desks or their hands or out windows. I talked to a few. So did Stan.
And they all had dreamed?
All of them. The same dream, with no difference.
Do you believe in it?
Yes. I've never been more certain.
And when will it stop? The world, I mean.
Sometime during the night for us, and then as the night goes on around the world, that'll go too. It'll take 24 hours for it all to go. They sat a while, not touching their coffee. Then they lifted it slowly and drank, looking at each other.
Do we deserve this?
It's not a matter of deserving, it's just that things didn't work out. I noticed you didn't even argue about it. Why not?
I guess I've a reason.
The same one everyone at the office had? She nodded slowly.
I didn't want to say anything. It happened last night, and the women on the block talked about it among themselves today. They dreamed. I thought it was only a coincidence.
She picked up the evening paper.
There's nothing in the paper about it.
Everyone knows, so there's no need. He sat back in his chair, watching her. Are you afraid?
No. I always thought I would be, but I'm not.
Where's that spirit called self-preservation they talk so much about?
I don't know. You don't get too excited when you feel things are logical. This is logical. Nothing else but this could have happened in the way we've lived.
We haven't been too bad, have we?
No, nor enormously good. I suppose that's the trouble. We haven't been very much of anything except us, while a big part of the world was busy being lots of quite awful things.
The girls were laughing in the parlor. I always thought people would be screaming in the streets at a time like this.
I guess not. You don't scream about the real thing.
You know, I won't miss anything but you and the girls. I never liked cities or my work or anything except you three. I won't miss a thing except maybe the change in the weather. A glass of ice water when it's hot. I might miss sleeping. How can we sit here and talk this way?
Because there's nothing else to do.
Well, that's it, of course. If there were, we'd be doing it. I suppose this is the first time in the history of the world that everyone has known just what they were going to do during the night.
I wonder what everyone else will do now, this evening, for the next few hours.
Go to a show, listen to the radio, watch television, play cards, put the children to bed, go to bed themselves, just like always.
In a way, that's something to be proud of, like always.
They sat a moment, and then he poured himself another coffee. Why do you suppose it's tonight?
Because?
And why not some other night in the last century, or 5 centuries ago, or 10?
Maybe it's because it was never October 11, 2009, ever before in history. And now that it is, and that's it. Because it's the year when things are as they are all over the world, and that's why it's the end.
You know, there are bombers on their schedules both ways across the ocean tonight that'll never see land.
That's part of the reason why.
Well, he said, getting up, what shall it be? Wash the dishes? They washed the dishes and stacked them away with special neatness. At 8:30, the girls were put to bed and kissed goodnight. The little lights by their beds turned on, and the door left open, just a tiny bit. I wonder, said the husband, coming from the bedroom and glancing back, standing there with his pipe for a moment.
What?
If the door will be shut all the way, or if it'll be left just a little ajar, so some light comes in.
I wonder if the children know.
No, of course not. They sat and read the papers and talked and listened to some radio music and then sat together by the fireplace watching the charcoal embers as the clock struck 10:30 and 11 and 11:30. They thought of all the other people in the world who had spent their evening, each in his own special way. Well, he said at last. He kissed his wife for a long time.
We've been good for each other anyway.
Yeah. Do you want to cry?
I don't think so.
They moved through the house and turned out the lights, went into the bedroom, and stood in the night, cool darkness, undressing and pushing back the covers. The sheets are so clean and nice.
Oh, I'm tired.
We're all tired. They got into bed and lay back.
Just a moment.
He heard her get out of bed and go into the kitchen. A moment later, she returned.
I just realized I had left the water running in the sink.
Something about this was so very funny that he had to laugh. She laughed with him, knowing what it was that she had done that was funny. They stopped laughing at last and lay in their cool night bed, their hands clasped, their heads together. Good night, he said after a moment.
Good night.
Sorry, your call did not go through. Will you please try your call again?